This is David Weiss for the Daily Worker Placement, and you're listening to The Game Changers, Episode 13, A New Game in Town, Part 2. In Part 1, we looked at the origin story of Wingspan, and how a new designer, who happened to be a woman, decided to create a game themed around something other than MOPS, that stands for Merchants, Orcs, Pharaohs, and Spaceships. A game that reflected one of her interests, in this case birding. And although there was definitely luck involved in Wingspan's success in terms of when it arrived on the scene, it was also a really good game, the product of hundreds of hours of playtesting and development. And it also benefited from the high quality of its components and artwork, which drew people in and immersed them in its theme. The excellence of the physical components in turn stemmed from the faith that its publisher, Stonemaier Games, had in Hargrave and her game. Now in part two, I'll try and articulate what makes Wingspan a game changer. There's Wingspan's influence as a game, and then there's what I and Hargrave herself represent for tabletop culture. The first part, how Wingspan has influenced tabletop, is of course very premature, given that it only came out last year. In terms of its game design, its mechanics, and so forth, it really didn't break any new ground, which I think Hargrave herself would be the first to agree with. It's a tableau-building, resource management game with both end-of-round and end-of-game scoring. I don't say this to belittle it. What it does extremely well. Especially given the number of birds in the game, the fact that it is balanced with many paths to victory is a design achievement in itself. The first and only time I've played Wingspan was right at the start of 2019, January 20th, 2019, a fact which I know thanks to my handy-dandy BG Stats app that I use to track my plays. One of my board gaming friends had bought it from Stonemaier the day pre-orders had gone live on January the 2nd, and it had taken only about 2 weeks to arrive. We set it up and played it, and, you know, it was okay. I thought it was a solid design, beautiful artwork. I appreciated the detailed ornithological data on the cards, which was there but unobtrusive to the gameplay. I was glad that I played it. I didn't feel like I had wasted my time, but nothing about it grabbed me and made me want to play it again, or buy it, which in some ways was a relief because I own enough games as it is. In 2020, AEEG published Hargrave's second major design, Mariposas, about the migration of the monarch butterfly, and it showed a huge amount of growth in her as a designer, as far as I was concerned, with a much more innovative mix of mechanics, all strongly aligned with the theme. Now, as 2019 unfolded and Wingspan became more and more of a phenomenon, I was really glad. Anything that brought new people into the hobby was a good thing, as far as I was concerned, and if Wingspan was their gateway, then great. For all that my opinion mattered, or matters, it deserves all the success it has received, including the Spiel des Jahres award it won for Expert Game of the Year, or Kennerspiel. All I'm saying is that Wingspan's influence has already made itself felt not by its design so much, but by its theme and by the platform it's given Hargrave to speak out on tabletop issues. And of course, the two are related. The homogeneity of themes in tabletop has reflected the cultural homogeneity in its pioneering designers, publishers, and audience. And their support for those kind of games has encouraged the same kind of designers to put out the same kinds of game. I'm not saying Wingspan was the first successful modern tabletop game with an unusual theme. Our fourth game changer, Twilight Struggle, was a political game about the Cold War. And, for instance, Hanabi by Antoine Bauza, a cooperative game which won the Spiel des Jahres in 2013, was about setting off fireworks. So it's still too early to tell how much major publishers and imprints will continue to stay in their comfort zones. The development period for tabletop games is measured in years, not months, and COVID has stalled the development of many games, but small and mid-sized publishers who usually can't afford to pay the licenses for major IP and who have always needed to look for emptier niches in the tabletop ecosystem where they don't have to compete directly with the major players, they've already drawn inspiration from Wingspan's success and have begun to pivot to designs with themes like map making, cartographers, visiting national parks, kids building a fort, and even helping a dying patient reach closure, a game called Holding On, The Life and Death of Billy Kerr. But if Wingspan's unique theme attracted media attention, the fact that its designer was a woman attracted even more. The headline of the March 2019 New York Times profile, after all, was "She invented a board game with scientific integrity. It's taking off." Almost all the interviews she did in tabletop media spent at least some time on whether and how much being a woman played a role for her experience not only as a designer, but as a tabletop player herself, and Hargrave was not shy about talking about that. For instance, in this February 2019 interview with the Inquisitive Meeple, she said the following. "Breaking into board games feels like I've gone back 30 years in terms of gender parity, and I've joined those women in groups all over again. It just feels so weird to me to go to gaming and playtesting events and be one of the very few women. If I hadn't had an absolutely burning desire to get this game out there, I might not have kept going to those events. I think that there are systemic things going on that have lowered the number of women who are gaming in general, and therefore the number of women designing games. But I do think it's getting better. I've noticed some changes in the few years that I've been in the design world." Then in a discussion with Girls Game Shelf, Hargrave said, "I would say the hardest thing so far has just been repeatedly having to walk into spaces that are so heavily skewed male. Now that I know everyone in our local playtesting community, I barely notice it because I'm just walking into a room full of my friends, but wow, it's pretty daunting those first few times to walk into a room of strangers and put something you made on the table, and when you're noticeably different, it just adds another level of discomfort." And in a lengthy blog post on the Stonemaier Games website, Hargrave went into very lengthy detail explaining the systemic barriers facing women, people of color, and LGBTQ+ people in tabletop, including what she terms cluelessly unwelcoming spaces, lack of representation in game art and situations, lack of role models, and socioeconomic inequality. Hargrave's point has been that there is a chicken and egg cycle here, where women, people of color, and genderqueer folk are being discouraged from entering the hobby and becoming creators themselves, who could complete the cycle by creating the sort of games that would attract women, people of color, and genderqueer folk. Wouldn't tabletop be better off with a wider variety of games? I would hope so, but not everyone agrees. Hargrave's advocacy has to be seen in the context of the social and cultural issues facing current tabletop, which in turn reflect those of Western society itself. In the broadest sense, as in many aspects of our culture right now, there are two camps, those who want to keep the status quo and those who wish to change it. In tabletop cultural terms, the keepers, or gatekeepers, were epitomized by people who originally found in tabletop a refuge from a social system that had looked on them as misfits, geeks, and nerds. Predominantly male, predominantly white, predominantly straight, with a significant streak of libertarianism thrown in. These original pioneers established and enforced tabletop's original cultural norms and assumptions, whether consciously or unconsciously, and felt they'd earned the right, by dint of years of loyalty and participation, to define the boundaries between gamers and non-gamers, between what topics could and couldn't be dealt with in games or discussed in game forums, and between what behavior was or was not acceptable at the gaming table or at conventions. The other faction, the Changers, for lack of a better term, try to widen tabletop scope and challenge its prejudices. Long before Elizabeth Hargrave came along, Maureen Hiron, 789, and Inca Brand, Village, along with many other women, have had decades-long careers as designers. Isaac Vega, Dead of Winter, and Eric Lang, Blood Rage, and Senfum Lim, Belfort, not only have had successful design careers, but also have worked actively to mentor young designers of color. And prominent tabletop media figures like Girls Game Shelf and Rule Gaviola have provided platforms for underrepresented groups to amplify those voices. And of course, at the grassroots level, there have been individuals who have spoken up on hundreds of threads and in thousands of conversations in the interest of changing the status quo. Traditionally, whenever questions arose on BGG or at conventions about things like whether Puerto Rico was romanticizing slavery or whether Cards Against Humanity was condoning rape, the response often was, "It's just a game. Don't take things so seriously. Can't you take a joke? Don't bring politics into this." That should sound familiar. But tabletop's new and wider audience weren't willing to be fobbed off with those responses anymore, and they persisted by asking, whose politics? Whose game? And whose rules? By the late 2010s, the popularity and power of modern tabletop had overspilled the banks of its sheltered reservoir. The rules, as such, were increasingly being called into question by its new and wider audience, who saw no reason why the hashtag MeToo movement, or Black Lives Matter, or the climate crisis, to name but three broad social movements, should stop outside tabletop's gates. Now, frankly, as I write this at the dog's bottom end of one of the worst years on record, I can't summon the strength and energy to offer up a detailed study of the specific issues and debates tabletop has come to grips with over the last few years. My original plan was to go through each one in detail and talk about the major players and talk about the debates themselves, but I only have enough energy left to briefly and most superficially list them. I've already quoted Elizabeth Hargrave speaking to the issue of how proactive publishers and media could be and should be in cultivating and amplifying underrepresented voices. Then there's the question of whether tabletop organizations, publishers, and creators have a moral obligation to speak out publicly on issues such as Black Lives Matter or the global climate crisis. Then we have the sexual portrayal of women in some tabletop and RPG art, an issue which has been around for decades since I was a kid and shows no sign of abating, I guess as long as teenage boys like to draw big boobies. We have the issue of the representation of diverse races, ethnicities, and sexualities in tabletop box art and characters. Then there's the question of the circumstances, if any, under which it's okay for designers or publishers to make use of or draw on artwork, language, history, and slang of cultures they don't belong to. There's the issue of the tacit acceptance of hidden or not-so-hidden racist imagery in tabletop artwork. For instance, the belated banning in June 2020 by Wizards of the Coast of certain Magic the Gathering cards and their artists, which had been known for years to have white supremacist overtones. And finally, the extent to which a designer's or a publisher's personal behavior, online or in person, should inform a consumer's or a reviewer's decision to buy their game or a media outlet's decision to review that product. A critical mass, in a literal sense, has begun to form around these changers to demand action on these dirty little secrets of tabletop culture. But like every other art form and cultural pursuit of our age, tabletop has become politicized to an unprecedented degree. Political and cultural polarization, social media toxicity, increasing income inequality, loss of faith in democratic institutions and processes, and the breakdown of civil discourse have all led to increasing hostility and entrenchment of thought. It's hard to see how this endgame is going to play out. All I know is that, as the wonderful Sam Cooke once sang, a change is gonna come. And in my mind, there's no doubt that both Elizabeth Hargrave and Wingspan embody this spirit of change, which is what makes Wingspan the last of our game changers. So, now that this little project has wound its way to a close, next time I'll be reflecting on the whole shebang, the whole shamir, the whole enchilada, and what I've learned from it. But for now, that was part 2 of episode 13 of The Game Changers. I'm David Weiss for the Daily Worker Placement. Thanks for listening. See you next time. And don't flip that table.